This is Sound Ideas. I'm Mike McCurdy. Chestnut Health Systems has come a long way since incoming CEO Dave Sherrar started there 29 years ago.
Our vision is that many of our clients and patients can have access to a true team approach for any kind of disorder or condition.
Charlie Schlenker introduces you to Sherrar, who shares more about Chestnut Health Systems. You'll hear from former Bloomington Mayor Rich Buchanan as he steps away from public life for health reasons. And current Mayor Terry Renner is in the studio to talk about brick streets, a welcoming ordinance protecting undocumented immigrants, and more. That and a GLT News update on the way. It's November 28th, 2017. This is Sound Ideas on GLT.
Support for the Sound Ideas podcast comes from listener contributions to GLT, with additional support from Country Financial Representative Justin M. Boyd. Information at justinmboyd.com. This is 89.1 GLT and WGLT.org.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Mike McCurdy. City of Bloomington aldermen approved a Brick Streets master plan, but what does it actually mean since funding levels were stripped from the plan? The community's mayors join us most Tuesdays following Monday evening council meetings. And in the studio to talk about Brick Streets and more is Bloomington Mayor Terry Renner. Terry, thanks for joining us on Sound Ideas.
Thanks a lot, Mike, for having me. This is great.
So why are Brick Streets important to this community? Why not just pave over them?
Because we only got about 3.5 miles of Brick Streets left in Bloomington, and they are part of our historic core. They're part of our older neighborhoods, and they add character to our community and add character to neighborhoods themselves. Economically, they've been shown to last 3 to 4 times as long. If you have a brick street, like the current brick street that we're thinking of possibly paving.
Monroe,
that's almost 100 years old. It was in the early 1920s. Asphalt lasts 24, 25 years. And so, yes, it's going to cost more up front, but the benefits, I think, are huge. And Scott Black, Alderman Black, made a very, very strong argument last night and said, you know, that a lot of the people in older neighborhoods feel like that they've been paying a lot for new development over the last 30 to 40 years.
And paved streets elsewhere.
And paved streets elsewhere.
While their brick streets suffer.
Right. Spent $14 million to shove water uphill for just one single development, that they have paid a lot of the costs of sprawl, and that they've been left behind. And
he actually voted against this measure because the funding levels were stripped out. Is that correct?
That's correct. And then he did vote for moving ahead with
the engineering dollars for
Monroe Street. So, no, Alderman Black is definitely a huge supporter of brick streets. He felt that that stripping the money figures out of the plan was not a good move.
Many of the brick streets that have been dug up to reach utilities underneath the street since this conversation began have been filled in with gravel patches instead of cement or asphalt, which can further damage the surrounding bricks. How does the city move forward on maintaining these streets now? You can't leave those gravel patches.
We cannot leave those gravel patches. That's part of what we've done. And in spite of the fact that some of the money was removed from the Brick Streets master plan, does not mean that we're not going to make progress. This is a strong policy statement that brick streets matter, our historic core matters, and that's why I think this is a huge victory. The dollar amounts, people are worried, and I think Alderwoman Schmidt was particularly concerned. I can't speak for her, but particularly concerned given that we have a $3+ million budget deficit that we've got to figure out how to fill that hole, because we have to have a balanced budget.
So this conversation will come up again as aldermen talk in detail about the next fiscal year's budget.
That's absolutely. And in fact, I was talking for an hour or so with Steve Rasmussen about this and many other financial issues just before I came here.
So you don't think it's toothless, even though the money has been stripped out?
It is not toothless.
What percentage of street resurfacing budget or other money, such as money for sidewalks, could be directed to brick streets, do you think?
I can't put a particular percentage on that, Mike, but this is definitely a priority. What it says is, along with sewers, along with water, along with downtown revitalization, along with other things, brick streets are at the table when we make our decisions with respect to budget and how to allocate dollars. And I guarantee you we will have money allocated next year. I think the council wants to have money allocated next year. Will it be, you know, the next $800,000 for that particular strip of Monroe? I don't know. But that is certainly going to be one of the things that are at the table.
But Monroe Street, from Clinton to Robinson, the alderman did approve engineering funds to begin looking at that street to prepare it for future reconstruction.
Correct. And you're not going to spend a couple hundred thousand dollars on engineering without following through. That doesn't mean that we'd follow through in the next year. It may be that it's the year after. But the other problem with an engineering study is you don't want it to get stale because then you've wasted money. So we are moving ahead. And again, Monroe was selected because it was the most neglected brick street that we have in the entire city of Bloomington.
That's Mayor Terry Renner. This is Sound Ideas. I'm Mike McCurdy. There was a large citizen presence at last night's meeting requesting the city move forward on a welcoming ordinance that would offer some protection to undocumented immigrants. The city's been considering this for a while. When are aldermen going to move on this particular ordinance?
That's a great question. We will have some probably 3-on-1 meetings. I believe a couple of the aldermen were interested in that, and that is in small groups. Talk about
3-on-1 with who? Two aldermen and
Not with me, okay, necessarily. I mean, everybody knows where I stand. I'm very strongly supportive of a welcoming city ordinance.
So aldermen meeting with whom?
Probably the city manager, acting city manager Steve Rasmussen. It's really not 3-on-1, but 3-on-others. And very likely Jeff Juergens, maybe some advocates, representative of the welcoming city ordinance, and to say, hey, you know, this is our, the thing is that our standard practice is not to do ICE's job. And that is one of the things that is a misconception. But at 500 feet, I strongly support a welcoming city ordinance. We are a nation of immigrants. People need to feel like they can call the police if they are attacked. I have had many people who have told me stories, including one woman who had an older son who attacked her. Her older son was, you know, documented. Her papers have expired. She was worried to call the police because of this violent situation. And we cannot have that. We need people in our community to feel like that they are part of our community. And that's what I very, very strongly support. And I will sign pretty much any welcoming city ordinance that the council passes. I hope that it's as strong as possible, and I would encourage our neighbors in Normal to do the same.
Critics might say this ordinance asks the police not to enforce the law.
We're not asking. Like, if ICE comes in, we do have to comply with other law enforcement agencies, but we are not going to do ICE's work for them.
And by ICE, you mean the it's the Immigration and Customs the federal organization.
Correct. Yeah. Yes, right. Exactly.
Is the Bloomington Police Department currently working with federal immigration officers to sweep up undocumented? Why is this necessary?
So people understand that we are taking a stand. First of all, I think it's as a policy statement, whether it's Philadelphia or Chicago or whoever, or Skokie, Illinois, that we take a stand that says, in spite of the Donald Trump administration that is doing unprecedented things, moving toward non-criminal prosecution or non-criminal deportation of law-abiding productive citizens, that is not our America, and that Bloomington is not going to take part in that national event. So, and to reinforce and to reassure people locally that we are a welcoming city, and we do value you, and you are safe in our community.
It's Sound Ideas. I'm Mike McCurdy in the studio with Bloomington Mayor Terry Renner. Aldermen voted to approve funding of the Small Business Development Center at IWU. It's a partnership when it comes to funding, and it was the percentage that seemed to hang up aldermen last night. Why are most agreements with the town, when dealing with revenue, a 60-40 split, and why was this one a 50-50 split with the town?
Well, the previous question is an easier one to answer than the latter question. I was somewhat puzzled myself. the generally speaking, when we have agreements that are based on economic issues or economic development, if they are bilateral, not like the EDC. The EDC is trilateral, so that includes three partners. That includes the county, that includes the city, and the town. If they are bilateral agreements, they're generally 60-40, because that's about the population split between Bloomington and Normal. They're not all that way, and that's one of the difficulties. I think the mayors and managers, next time we meet, in fact, I talked with Steve Rasmussen this morning, the next time we meet, we're going to try to clarify, and I believe we're meeting next week, you know, that we should be pursuing a 60-40 split on most economic kinds of issues. And I think there was some confusion. And so I wish that we had pursued this at a 60-40 level, no other reason than to say that this is our standard operating procedure, and not to make it seem as if that there was a slap at the town of Normal. This was not meant that way.
You helped manage the agenda. Why was that option even allowed to be on the agenda for council? Why not just provide a 60-40 split?
Because that was last week what the aldermen wanted. They wanted two options, 60-40 split and a 50-50 split.
And why do you think aldermen ultimately chose the 50-50 over the 60-40?
I don't know. I think given that this was a 6-2 vote, there were probably a variety of different views of the group of six that did decide to vote for a 60-40 split. And again, this is largely symbolic. We're really not talking about that much money. We're talking about $9,000. This was really more of post-Metro Zone. As we move forward, we want to be collaborative. We've got, you know, we're not going anywhere. We want to foster trust in intergovernmental relations. And so I think that was disappointing to me.
The town still has to vote on this. What if they come back and say, no, we're going to stick with 60-40? It goes back to Bloomington then, right?
That's true. So Bloomington has committed to 50% of the funding. If the town of Normal decided that they were going to provide 40% of the funding, then the center is down about 10% in terms of their budget.
But the Bloomington alderman could reconsider.
The Bloomington alderman could reconsider. And the other thing is that of the six people who voted yes at the next regular meeting, anyone on the prevailing side can move to have a reconsideration of this particular proposal.
So we have the Bloomington EDC, the Economic Development Council, be an advantage. Both communities also have economic development point people. Why is the SBDC even necessary?
Its role is very different. It works individually and helps train and really nurture people who are interested in developing small businesses. And small businesses are the backbone of this or virtually any community. And as we try to diversify our economic base in both Bloomington and Normal and all of McLean County, this is really a critical measure. Now, let's also be clear. The council last night made it clear that they strongly supported this center and that they thought it was an excellent idea and they had a great track record. But it was just a wrinkle, if you will, on whether it's 50-50 or 60-40 in terms of the cost split.
Okay, Terry, thanks for your time on Sound Ideas, as always.
Thank you so much, Mike.
The community's mayors join us most Tuesdays following Monday evening council meetings. Next week, you'll hear from Town of Normal Mayor Chris Coos. This is Sound Ideas on GLT. I'm Mike McCurdy. You tell us the conversations you hear on Sound Ideas, especially those with Mayors Coos and Renner, are some of the things you value the most about this show and GLT. Today is the day to demonstrate how much you value this public radio station. Pat Peterson and Laura Kennedy are in the studio for Giving Tuesday and to tell you more.
You can make your contribution at 309-438-8910 or go to WGLT.org. Ahead on Sound Ideas, a changing of the guard at Chestnut Health Systems. We'll hear more about that. I am Laura Kennedy in with Pat Peterson.
And glad to be here with you for Giving Tuesday. It's the Giving Tuesday one-day fund drive, and here's what we're hoping is going to happen. We're hoping that you're going to help pay for Sound Ideas and everything else you count on GLT to provide, because we just can't bring you Sound Ideas without your help. We're hoping you'll get the message that Bloomington Normal's only independent listener listener-powered radio station depends on your financial support, because without your financial support, there is no GLT.
Yeah, and we're especially hoping everyone who has never contributed before gets the message and gives what they can to help. Joining together with your fellow GLT listeners with your first-time contribution right now. Help GLT pay the programming bills. We're hoping to hear from you now at 309-438-8910 or WGLT.org. You've been meaning to become a GLT contributor. You almost did it last time we asked, but somehow we didn't quite close the deal. So let's try again today.
Maybe this will close the deal for you. Your first-time contribution right now, $50, $100, whatever you can afford, will not only help pay for Sound Ideas, it's also going to do away with the guilt you feel when you hear us ask for your support and choose not to contribute. So take advantage of the moment. Give now. Make that Giving Tuesday contribution. Get rid of the guilt. 309-438-8910. Or online at WGLT.org.
You know, in a time when new newsrooms everywhere are shrinking, the GLT newsroom is expanding. With Sound Ideas, we're offering more local content than ever before. All kinds of stuff, local issues, events, coverage of the arts, music, and culture.
You may be wondering how we can do this. Well, how is GLT able to invest in a strong news presence when other news outlets are slashing expenses and cutting reporting in favor of, like, sort of canned programming?
Yeah, well, the answer is simple. The answer is you. As a nonprofit, community-supported public radio station, GLT depends on you to help pay for the excellent local news service you demand and deserves. Think about Sound Ideas and everything that GLT is doing to invest in local journalism. It's your financial contributions at 309-438-8910 or WGLT.org that help make this possible. Please contribute now, whatever you can best afford, and do it now.
Support for GLT comes from Justin M. Boyd, Country Financial Representative, proud to serve you from his new office in historic downtown Bloomington. Justin offers life insurance options to protect your family and leave a lasting legacy. Information at justinmboyd.com. This is 89.1 GLT and WGLT.org.
It's Sound Ideas. I'm Mike McCurdy. Rich Buchanan made his mark in the political arena over the past 46 years in and around McLean County, first as mayor of Bloomington and then as a member of the McLean County Board. But he doesn't like the label.
I'm not a politician. I'm an unselfish, dedicated public servant. And I mean that. I've never considered myself a politician. And the longer I see view politicians and their behavior, I don't want to claim to be one.
Buchanan has retired from public life as his health fails, but he sat down with GLT's Brian Bloodworth to talk about his public life. He was first elected to the Bloomington City Council in 1971. In 1977, Buchanan won nearly 63% of the vote in the election for mayor. He tells GLT's Brian Bloodworth a family illness 8 years ago prompted him to decide against running for a third term.
I had some exposure. I was working for GTE several years before I came to Bloomington Normal. It was a hobby already for me. I was president of the Chamber of Commerce. I was president of the Rotary Club. Back in those days, if the phone company had an office and a staff, the manager was expected to be part of the community. And I got the bug.
That bug led Buchanan into politics in Bloomington in 1971.
It was still at large. Wish it still were. Worst thing we ever did was go to the ward system. But in 71, there was an election, and there was, you know, there was a total of five people on the council, including the mayor, all elected at large. Of our friends showed up, because I never liked to say, why did I run? I had several people approach me. I had one group approach, Judy and I, to run for city council. Now, why they ever thought that I could beat an 18-year incumbent and a 12-year incumbent, I don't know. Judy was born with a campaign manager's genes, and I'm serious. I can recall going to my boss's boss, Roger Joslin. And at that time, he was chair of the Republican Party. And his first reaction, Roger told me, he said, "Well, you don't have a chance, but we were electing two." I got elected and came in a very strong second.
But you're a people person and always have been.
You're absolutely right. And I tried to make it a genuine people person. I treat people then and treat people now the way they need to be treated. I am conservative and I'm nonpartisan.
Buchanan says there's no basic training for a politician's job.
The basic training is, and not be what you and I, as we were growing up, would call a brown nose. It's called be reasonable. I recently asked somebody asked me, "Rich, what, give me a one-word description of your, how you react to being elected mayor or a councilman or anything." And I said, "There's no problem. That word is fun. It just turned me on." And I treated people with respect.
Buchanan says one event early in his mayoral career made him step back and reevaluate his priorities.
I had 2-year-old, 3-year-old, whatever they were, daughters. And I came home one Saturday night after serving the city. Got home about midnight. Didn't wake them up, but I said goodnight to them. And I stood there in just total fear. What have I done to myself and my family? I had not seen those two girls awake in a week. And I said, something's wrong here. This is not what I signed up for. I had a technique that rescued me from that. A short version is Mary Williams, who recently passed away. Without her, I wasn't much. So what I did, when somebody would call and want me to cut a ribbon or go welcome a new pastor or whatever, I wouldn't lie to anybody. But what they would do, somebody would call and say, "Well, we want the mayor to come out and do this." And then the mayor would do that, come for a 6 o'clock meeting, have a dinner, have a business meeting. So I quickly changed that. I said, "Mary, when you get an invitation, because it's not a well-kept secret, you're a mayor. Doesn't control his or her own life. You just do what your calendar says to do." She would share with them, and this was true. I said, "Tell Pastor Jones, that's my family night. And find out three things. What time do you want me there? What time do you need me there? What topic do you want me to be responsive to, and what time will I be free to go home and be with my family?" And just like that, it changed. I would not have run for a second term if that had continued.
Buchanan did decide to run for a second term and won in a landslide.
I served 6 years as a councilman and 8 as mayor. Then, and had some illness in the family that was just pervasive, just gut-wrenching. And so I didn't run. Anybody can be mayor, but not everybody can be a dad. I wanted to run. Don Pierce would have done fine. Jesse Smart did fine. Their styles were a lot different than mine, especially Jesse's. And I love Jesse.
This is Sound Ideas, and I'm Brian Bloodworth. We're talking with Rich Buchanan, the former mayor of Bloomington and longtime political figure in McLean County, about his term as mayor and why he chose to stay in the political arena.
I just enjoyed it. $4,800 a year was my salary. I voted against, and not for political reasons, I voted against 2 increases in pay. because I believe in the citizen soldier. We're paying twice as much for a mayor as we should, in my opinion. To me, if you can hire people who will do the job and have reasonable qualifications, if you can hire them through the electoral process, they the ones ought to be mayor.
Cannon says he's always been a proponent for a metro-style government.
You put the ballot in front of me right now, I'll vote to merge these two towns. I believe give us 10 years and we'd save millions. I could take you right now and show you. See that sewer? See that one? That third one? We don't need the third one. It became a matter of, it's money. Probably doesn't surprise you.
Buchanan credits one person for initiating a working relationship between the Bloomington and Normal city councils.
Give Nancy Froelich just about 99% of the credit to beginning the process of having this town learn how to work with each other. Save the other 1% for Richard Godfrey and Rich Buchanan. And it's a crime for Mayor of Bloomington to lead the charge to act like one city, because we are one city. First joint meeting we had, we went out to Grady's Pizza, which was tradition for us. We went out to Grady's, sat down and said, this is not what I signed up for. In fact, I facetiously, we couldn't make official motions, but I officially made an informal motion. The two councils were gathered that I move the sun rise tomorrow. That's all we could agree on. It was awful. You think it's bad now?
Buchanan also says he had a strong working relationship with Normal Mayor Richard Godfrey.
And he and I were best friends. I couldn't have stood it without Dick. Dick and I would travel together. I cut ribbons for him. He'd cut ribbons for me. The thing I'm most pleased with was getting a little maturity. I don't mean chronological maturity. Getting people like mayors and council members to work together. What's amazing what happened, staff always did want to work together. We started doing joint things with the parks departments and everything. I think we're better off now that you had Godfrey and Buchanan best friends. I think he was a great mayor. Pardon the ego. But if you'd have had Buchanan and Godfrey, who talked to each other daily, we had a lot of successes. And I think the biggest success would be Froelich, Buchanan, Godfrey, not necessarily in that order. And I was proud of that.
How would Buchanan rate himself as mayor?
I hadn't been arrested. I didn't steal any money. I'll be honest. You have to have some ego to be mayor. I get post-mayoral service very high. I give myself a B+. I feel good about what I did. Didn't do everything right, but I believe a legitimate survey to get a response to that question, I wouldn't get any lower than a B. I don't have any regrets.
Former Mayor Rich Buchanan also tells Brian Bloodworth his 5+ year term on the county board was a cakewalk compared to being mayor. This is Sound Ideas, and it's Giving Tuesday, your chance to financially support this public radio station. Here to tell you more is GLT's Pat Peterson.
Thanks for tuning in for Sound Ideas on GLT. We're glad you enjoy this program live or as a podcast, and we hope you're willing to pay for it this morning with your call at 309-438-8910 or with a contribution online at WGLT.org.
I'm Laura Kennedy, and we'd love to hear from you. $50, $25, $75, whatever works best for you. Today is Giving Tuesday, the National Day of Giving. During this one day of fund drive, we're asking you to give whatever you can to help pay for the GLT programs you love, and we hope that includes Sound Ideas. Give a little or give a lot. No matter how much you do give, you'll be helping to pay for Sound Ideas and everything else that that you expect from GLT. Help make this one day GLT Fund Drive a flaming success. Give now at WGLT.org or contribute at 309-438-8910.
We've set a goal of $10,000 in listener support for this Giving Tuesday. That's how much GLT needs to meet the 2017 program budget and start 2018 ready and able to bring you the fact-based news and smart entertainment you expect from your public radio station. Your contribution right now, $50, $25, whatever works, is going to help meet that $10,000 goal and keep GLT strong in the new year. Volunteers are waiting for your call at 309-438-8910, or you can click on donate at WGLT.org.
We hear from folks that GLT is an essential part of their life in Central Illinois, and listener support is an essential part of life here at GLT. Contributing listeners are GLT's most important source of revenue. They provide the money we use to help pay for the programs that are an essential part of your day.
So, do me a favor. Imagine life in Bloomington Normal without GLT, without all the news you hear and talk about with your family and friends, all the information that keeps you well-informed, connected to your community, and connected to the world, all the smart entertainment. It would all be gone. So help keep GLT here for you and your community. Help stay well-informed and connected. Make that essential contribution of yours right now, whatever you can afford, at 309-438-8910. That's a number that an anonymous donor just called from Bloomington. They contributed $25. Maybe that works for you. Maybe it's more. Let us know when you call 309-438-8910.
Or go online at WGLT.org. You can use a credit card to contribute. You can put your money to work for GLT right away or ask us to bill you and you can send a check. Just tell your phone volunteer your preference when you call 309-438-8910 or choose your payment method online at WGLT.org. We would love to hear from you. $25, $75, $500. Make your contribution on Giving Tuesday.
It's Sound Ideas. I'm Mike McCurdy. Chestnut Health Systems is preparing for a changing of the guard. Longtime CEO Russ Hagen and Chief Operating Officer Alan Sender are headed out the door and toward retirement from the not-for-profit health agency. Incoming CEO Dave Sherrar tells GLT's Charlie Schlenker this presents challenges, but Chestnut is well prepared. Sherrar says Hagen and Sender had been mentoring and preparing for many years for the succession. He does say over the next 5 years, all of those plans will have to come in contact with reality.
You know, our vision for Chestnut is that we become a true integrated delivery system. So sometimes we think of healthcare and mental health and substance abuse care as very siloed, and you go to this agency and you go to this place, and then you may get a referral over here. And so our vision is that many of our clients and patients can have access to a true team approach for any kind of disorder or condition that they're bringing forward.
What are the challenges to that integration from the state, from the federal government, and from society as a whole? Let's start with the state.
The funding mechanisms don't always support integration. The way that we're reimbursed still silos things. We still have, you know, in the state, a Department of Mental Health or a Department of Alcoholism and Substance Abuse. And so I think there is a sense that we move to a Department of Human Services, and all these services really need to connect and work hand in hand rather than be treated separately.
And the federal level, what are the challenges there?
Yeah, at the federal level, as you're aware, Charlie, we put in place a federally qualified health center. So Chestnut, in the past 3 years, has entered into the primary healthcare business. So at the federal level, we have challenges around Medicaid reimbursement, the security of Medicaid reimbursement, how important that is for access for many of the patients that we serve here in McLean County and our other service areas. So really making sure that we have a solid Medicaid reimbursement plan that supports access here, I think, is a big challenge.
You had never really thought you would get into the federally qualified center business.
Yeah, it was interestingly, federally qualified health centers have been around for years and years. There are dozens in the state of Illinois. McLean County was really one of the last larger populated or suburban areas to have one in place. We've seen them in Springfield, Peoria, and Decatur, and other places long before we had one here. So there was a definite need, and Chestnut has always had an approach that if there's a community need that needs to be filled, we want to do our best to deliver on that.
Having started it, how are you making it fit into your institutional mission?
Our brand isn't necessarily primary care, so what we have to do is re-educate the community that we have these services now and educate referral sources and really importantly make sure that our different programs, because they're not all co-located, they're in different buildings and, you know, even here in Bloomington Normal, we have different facilities and we also have other service areas in the state. But we want to make sure that there's really good cross-referral and communication between our programs. So if someone comes into our crisis mental health detox unit, let's say for a detox issue and they haven't seen a primary care doc in 20 years, that we make sure they have a good physical and that we identify those needs and we get that patient to that primary care doc and that primary care doc's talking to counseling staff and nursing staff on that detox unit and they're communicating about the needs of that patient. So those are the challenges, making sure that all of our parties have, both from a medical record standpoint and a communication standpoint, the ability to do that.
What is the uncertainty over the direction of healthcare at the federal level doing to you in the ability to construct this new network of referrals and new emphasis and the ability to get funded for the cohesion that has to happen to make it work?
Yeah, you know, Charlie, there have been just periodic threats to Medicaid funding, especially in the past year or so, and that is so vital because we know that a lot of these patients, if they don't get access to care, their healthcare problems will continue. Many of them term chronic, many of them are long term. There's a tendency for these types of patients to end up in the emergency rooms, and our goal is to keep them out of there and provide preventative care and make sure that we're treating the whole person.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. We're talking with Dave Sherrar. One more challenge to the integration that you've been talking about is society. Is society buying into the new wellness paradigm yet? And how do we bring ourselves to adopt that to lower medical costs across the board?
I think we are seeing movement there where there is more awareness around the need to self-direct and to take responsibility for our own health and well-being and to do things to monitor our own health. I think we're seeing that. We're seeing a lot of tools emerge where to help people do that.
So, like what?
Not that they all work the same way, Charlie, but for example, there are some technology devices that help people track things, even in people recovering from substance use disorder where different apps can help them monitor their behavior and trigger points for relapse and this sort of thing. And certainly with diabetes and other chronic conditions, we see a lot of tools out there to help with this.
One little known aspect about Chestnut is its research arm. Tell us a little bit more about that, would you?
It was part of our CEO, Russ Hagen's vision many years ago that we find ways to help the field as a whole adopt more evidence-based practice and that we determine which treatments work well for which types of clients. So in that spirit, we created a research institute that started out very small. It's now grown to about 50 staff, and a lot of our funding does come from the National Institutes of Health, National Institute of Drug Abuse, or National Institute of Alcohol and Alcohol Abuse. And the Substance Abuse Mental Health Services Administration, a variety of funders. But we have done a number of randomized trials around the country at different treatment sites to determine what treatments work well and what doesn't. And we're working to make sure that practitioners use evidence-based practice and we monitor their compliance or their fidelity to those approaches so that we know what works. So this is one of the exciting things about Chestnut. And we started out using our own treatment programs as kind of our own lab since they were right in our backyard.
Can you give listeners some examples of the fruits of that research over the years that have moved the needle on practices in what you do?
We did the largest trial in the nation around cannabis and cannabis treatment for youth, where we looked at several different treatment models and different sites. And without going into great detail, as a result of those trials, practices changed. The way youth for cannabis addiction were treated changed, and we found that outcomes improved over time based on some of the findings that we had. We're now engaged. I think it's a really exciting project where one of our scientists has done longitudinal studies for 10 and 15 years following individuals discharged from substance use treatment to see what happens as they approach later life, the 50s and the 60s, and doing follow-up on them for decades to see what the conditions are, what the predictors are, how they're doing. Did the rates of incarceration or treatment episodes or homelessness change for these folks? So we're doing exciting work like that. But it's still going on. It was refunded so that we're following people later in life with this.
Primary care with the federally qualified centers, research, addiction treatment, employee improvement and wellness initiatives in 150 companies, credit counseling. How do you tie all that together, and what more do you want to do over the next 10 years?
Yeah, that's a good question, Charlie. I mean, we're a very unique not-for-profit. Unlike most not-for-profits, they might focus on a single population. You know, for example, it might be child welfare, developmental disabilities, or mental health. But Chestnut's always had a very diversified approach. We've been very entrepreneurial, and we run 7 or 8 lines of business, as you just kind of laid out. And I think the strength in that is it's helped us weather some storms because of this great diversity that we do have. Now, not everything you mentioned completely ties together in an integrated fashion, but much of it does. And as I mentioned, that's kind of our challenge now, is to bring together primary health, substance use treatment, different mental health services, and certainly housing. I mean, housing is a huge, huge need for many, many of our clients.
Is that one of those things that will drive improvement in everything else health-related that they do? Some people make that argument that first comes housing and then comes treatment.
Yeah, it's kind of that basic order of needs, that it's hard for someone to deal with their addiction problem or mental health problem if they don't have adequate or stable housing. And so for many folks, even in our community and others, stable housing is a big part of the solution that we need to address.
Is that something Chestnut should focus on, though, because you have been in the treatment game for so long?
Well, we do have a small housing program, you know, here in McLean County for women with substance use issues. But in the southwest part of the state, we call it Metro East St. Louis, we run 220 housing units for individuals with mental health problems and substance use problems. And we have a lot of experience in that arena, and we even receive funding from HUD to do that.
Are outcomes better in the people in those housing units than they are in the population as a whole?
I think yes. I can't point to the specific studies that focus on that, but certainly people in housing with some support, they move to more independent forms of living, more self-sufficient forms of living, and sometimes that support can be backed off over time because they're getting past some problems and learning to deal with whatever chronic issues they have.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. We're talking with Dave Sherrar, the incoming CEO of Chestnut Health Systems. He starts in January. McLean County government is leaning heavily on your institution to help with the opiate problem and with the mental health issues that have arisen to drive the expansion of the McLean County Jail. Lay out that picture writ small as opposed to globally, would you?
Yeah, I think the McLean County government and administration is really doing some innovative things to address these problems and bring all the players that are necessary together to provide solutions. I think they're looking at some very data-driven approaches to help predict who might be in need of these services and the kind of interventions that would be required. So I think that is underway. And certainly McLean County government understands the need for housing and is involved with some grants to help find solutions to this. If I recall, it's kind of under a model that they're looking to endorse called Pay for Success, where different providers, different agencies, different systems of care get reimbursed based upon achieving certain outcomes, kind of the new trend towards this value-based reimbursement. So I think the county's really doing good work in this area.
Chestnut Health System CEO-designate Dave Sherrar spoke with GLT's Charlie Schlenker. Sherrar is the author of more than 75 articles and studies related to employee assistance, managed care, and behavioral health sciences. Chestnut now operates in more than 150 countries. This is Sound Ideas on GLT, supported by listener financial contributions. To tell you how you can be a financial contribution or a contributor, Laura Kennedy and Pat Peterson are in the studio.
You could give us a call at 309-438-8910 or go online to WGLT.org. This is GLT's Giving Tuesday, our one-day fund drive. Right now, we're asking everyone who's tuned in to give what they can to help pay for GLT's great news, information, and entertainment. So you're listening, all right, so please contribute a little or a lot, $25 or $500. It all goes to pay for the programming, including Sound Ideas. Don't wait. Call 309-438-8910 or give online at WGLT.org.
We've set a pretty ambitious goal for this Giving Tuesday, $10,000 in listener support. $10,000 in one day is no small feat, but you know what? We're confident that with your help, we can get there. Make your first-time contribution, renew your annual support, or increase your investment in GLT. It all counts towards the goal, and it all helps pay for the programs. You can do that at 309-438-8910, or if you'd rather, click on Give Now at WGLT.org.
You know, we have lots of conversations here at GLT asking ourselves what questions, like what will we explore on Sound Ideas in the weeks ahead? And once we decide what's worth your time and attention, we get to work. We find experts and everyday people to illuminate the topics that we want to cover, like that great interview we had with Brian Bloodworth earlier. We spend hours researching, editing, and producing reports on local issues and events that matter to you.
And you've told us that you really appreciate the results. You value the stories and the interviews. You've gone out of your way to thank us for helping you to be a better citizen, to better understand local issues and events. Well, we're really glad to hear that. After all, you are the one we are working for, mm-hmm. but please make sure we can keep working for you. Make that contribution right now. Help pay for Sound Ideas. Keep the local news that you value coming at 309-438-8910 or click on donate at WGLT.org.
That's what Nancy Anderson did today. Nancy commented, "This is all the news I can trust." And we appreciate the confidence and the contribution, Nancy. Thank you so much. If you're wondering how much to contribute today, please understand that there's no fixed amount. Some people are giving $25. Some people are giving $500. The important thing to remember is every dollar you can spare goes to pay for Sound Ideas, for the NPR news that we bring you. We've got a news update coming up in just a moment. Here and Now is coming up as well. The important thing to remember is that every dollar you can spare goes to pay for these programs and all the other great GLT programs you enjoy. Every contribution moves us closer to the all-important Giving Tuesday goal, which is $10,000. Make yours now online at WGLT.org or call 438-8910.
Here's how far into the community this public radio station goes. We have a good friend of the station who just came in to give us yet another contribution today.
Woohoo!
in at the request of a really nice guy, a tenant, who helps her around the house and in the garden. He said, I heard it on the radio this morning. I want to hear more, and so I'm going to support it. Thank you so much. Join these wonderful people at 309-438-8910 or go online and give what you can at WGLT.org.
You'll be earning bragging rights when you do that. So go online to WGLT.org or call 438-8910. It's Giving Tuesday.
Support for GLT comes from Luther Oaks, a life plan community that offers a continuum of care, including independent living, assisted living, and memory care, with short-term rehabilitation and skilled nursing available to residents. Information at lutheroaks.org. This is 89.1 GLT and WGLT.org.
Thanks for choosing Sound Ideas on WGLT Normal and WGLT.org. Our website is where you can find the full Sound Ideas podcast and the individual stories and interviews you heard today from Brian Bloodworth, Laura Kennedy, and Charlie Schlinker. Let us know what you think of Sound Ideas. Post comments at facebook.com/WGLTFM. Our email address is news@WGLT.org or tweet about the show. Use the hashtag Sound Ideas. We're all at WGLT News. I'm at Mike McCurdy. This is 89.1 GLT and WGLT.org, Bloomington Normal's public media.